Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, it's me, Wayne Klingman, the host of the Milwaukee Mob Podcast. I'd like to welcome you around. I know it's been a couple weeks since I did one, but as you might know, because you listen to these shows, I've been dealing with the reversal from hell. And thank God, praise his holy name, they're not here anymore because the last party roofers got it done. So no further ado, and he's laughing for a reason, boys and girls. With no further ado, let's bring on the good-looking, the famous, and multi-talented, indeed, director of directors, I give you the famous Darby Kern. Good morning, sir.
Thanks, Wayne. Good morning, Wayne. I'm not sure how famous I am yet, but you and I are going to work on that together, brother.
Right, right. And again, I appreciate you quite a bit because the last couple of weeks dealing with these roofers, it was nice to be able to call you up and basically scream on your shoulder. It was a true hell.
Well, that's what friends do, man. You can call me anytime, except like late at
night. Right, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning might be straight up. But again, doing these things are important. But we've known each other for a while, right?
We have. It's been like 15 years at least, I think, back in the old IFG days. The Independent Filmmakers Guild.
Right. Now, what was the IFG?
The IFG, the Independent Filmmakers Guild, was a group that was started by Scott Harf in Green Bay to get together a group of like-minded artists who wanted to make movies. And Scott he's a great guy, and he attracts people because he's a great guy. And we started in his basement and talked about things we liked doing, who wanted to do what, who were writers and who were directors, and who were actors. And it became a little community in Green Bay and the surrounding areas for people to really draw on talent and experience to make movies or to get started, to find the people who would help them make beginning projects. And, you know, some of those projects were done with some really low-quality cameras and, you know, bad sound and all that stuff. But we came together as a group and would watch them and critique and say, hey, you know, somebody would say, hey, you know, you had a problem with this. Here's how you can make it better. Or, you know, if you're looking for an actor to play this part or an actress to play this part, I know the perfect person. And for probably 6 or 7 years, the IFG was just a great resource, and people were using it a lot to make short movies and even a couple features. And, there were degrees of success with them, but there was a lot of experience. There was a lot of creative juices flowing, and it was awesome. When it was great, it was great. And we saw some, we saw some people grow, including myself, because I was fairly inexperienced. I'd made a couple of things, but not with any great degree of, you know, skill yet. But we grew, the whole group grew, and some people who started from nothing except an idea or the idea that they'd love to make movies started making movies, and some of them are still around. So it's pretty cool.
Unfortunately, I had the pleasure.
I was going to say the group didn't last because life intruded on everybody and people started having children and getting married and all of a sudden they had other commitments, you know, which I totally get. I was one of them.
Yeah, I mean, that happens. I have to say, I made it up from where I am, southeastern Wisconsin, twice, once to promote my film festival at Game of Lake Michigan.
Yep.
And before that, to help get people on board the Wisconsin Film Initiative that I helped start.
Yeah,
and
I remember that.
I found your group to be very welcoming to me and my ideas. I want to thank you for that again.
Well, you're welcome. I remember you coming to my house for some reason once, and I think it was about the Wisconsin Film Board. You were talking to us, a group of us,
right.
And that was a while back. I don't remember all the details.
Yeah, a while back. That's how we met, and then you came down to my film festival came from Lake Michigan.
Yep.
Both, I think,
twice.
You went to the one. I don't know if you did you come to Milwaukee, too?
I did. Yep.
Okay.
I had a short film called, which one was it? It was about the ghost of the priest killing people.
Okay. I can't think of it.
I can't remember.
And we showed damage the second year.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's what I came for the second time.
Right.
Damage.
Yeah,
which
right.
was a feature
that,
Yeah, I produced that one. It was written and directed by Paul Reinhardt. I'm very proud of that that film.
Sure, as you should be. I mean, the idea is that it's better to make something than sit around and talk about making something, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I have a friend who some people might know, Drew Neerdals, his name is, and he went to school at the Brooks Institute, and he was at AFI for a while, too. Just really, really talented guy with a great eye. And he lived out in Hollywood for a while, did a lot of TV shows and some smaller budget features. But he said, you know, everybody's got an idea. 4% of those people actually finish a script, and then maybe like 0.5% of them actually finish a movie. So it's once you finish a movie, it's quite an accomplishment. It really sets you apart from, you know, the other 99.9% of the population. So.
Right. I mean, movies are difficult to make, as we know ourselves. I mean, sometimes
yeah.
things go right or all the way, right? As we experience with Whole Card, and sometimes things blow up one thing after another.
Yeah, Whole Card, since you segued into it so beautifully, Whole Card is a blessed project, it seems. I mean, it came together fast and everything went smooth. So yeah, I'm happy to show it to people when we get it all completely edited and scored and everything. So.
Right, I mean, it did come together rather quickly. I mean, we started talking about, what, was it June or July?
I would say maybe the end of June. I'm guessing the whole thing to this point has been about 5 weeks. I mean, to me, it really went fast. So, and 5 weeks to me is pretty fast on something like this. I mean, I've got projects that kind of stewed in the hopper for 6 months, which you lose a creative edge when you do that. But this time things were going and moving and we were blessed with an awesome cast who they were all game and they came to play, man, and they had fun. I mean, I've gotten emails from pretty much everybody saying, yeah, great time. So glad to be a part of it. Appreciate you and Wayne and Sean, our cinematographer, did a great job making everybody look beautiful. And we had fun. And we're going to have a good movie, too.
Now, if I should know, I produced the thing. Now, you were not only were you the director, but you wrote the script, correct?
I wrote the script after you and I worked out a story, yeah.
And when I thought, now, how hard was that script to put together? That's quite a short time frame to put together a script.
Well, the fact of the matter is, you know, talking to you, I mean, the first ideas I had were very different from what we landed on. And I came up with some ideas, and some of them survived until the end. But you know what? When you and I talked, you gave me some ideas that opened other creative veins, so to speak. And, you know, we followed that a little bit and ended up with a story that was better. So when I sat down to write the script, it didn't take real long. I mean, it's a short. So, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, Sylvester Stallone sitting down and writing Rocky in 3 days, which is not really true either. But, a script like that took, I don't know, maybe a little over a week. But we did some planning with the story beforehand. And I remember you and I laughing a lot when we were talking about it, you know, just because things sounded so good to us. And you, with your extensive knowledge of the mob background and the Milwaukee mob specifically, was very, very helpful. mean, I grew up in Milwaukee in the 70s and 80s, and I didn't know a lot of this stuff was going on around me. You know, the funny thing, that the first thing that really made it clear to me that something was going on in the city was when I read Donnie Brasco, which was years before the movie came out. I recommend the book. I can't really recommend the movie so much. But in the book, there's a chapter called Milwaukee, and Donnie Brasco, or Joe Pistone, however you say his name, got the somebody said, "Hey man, we want you to go to Milwaukee and check out what's going on there." I think specifically with the Ballastrieri family, whose pizza I had eaten many times and love, can still do. But he went to tell his partner. I don't remember his name right now, but it was the guy that Al Pacino played in the movie. But he says to him, "Hey, we're going to Milwaukee, hanging out with the Ballastrieri's for a while." And this guy says, "Milwaukee? Are you crazy? Those guys are nuts. They kill people in Milwaukee." And this is a mobster from New York kind of saying that he's afraid of the mobsters in Milwaukee because they kill people. And I thought, What is going on? I didn't know any of this stuff. I mean, I knew there was kind of a mob in Milwaukee, but I didn't. It never dawned on me that they were as powerful as they were, and they had so much influence. And part of me is like, "Wow, that's really cool." And part of me is like, "What? That's not that cool." You know what I mean?
Exactly. If I have to give a couple of shout outs if I can. One is to my good friend Gary Jenkins, who encouraged me to look in the Milwaukee Mob, because before I met Gary Jenkins and listened to his show, Gangland Wire, I didn't know very much about Milwaukee myself. And then again, my good friend and the writer of the great comic book Lucky, Christian, whose last name I'm going to horribly mispronounce, so I won't bother. Christian, who wrote, again, the comic book Lucky, guided me to resources, people to talk to, web pages to visit, encouraged me to start this podcast. And Christian especially encouraged me to do something with film, because he says there's many, many, many untold stories.
Yeah. That's true. And, you know, excuse me, it's funny, but so many people love mob movies, you know, and what's that all about? I mean, I know why I love The Godfather, and I know why I love Goodfellas. And, you know, before we started here, I was watching an old episode of Wise Guy, and I've been watching it for a couple of weeks just to kind of get a mindset. And I love that show. You know, and I wish there was a way to bring it back, you know, but it's probably been too long now. But I love watching this stuff. And, you know, my dad, who probably never committed a crime in his life, never thought about stealing gum as a kid, he loved the mob movies. You know, he got me going on The Godfather when I was probably well before I should have. But, you know, we love these guys, and you look at the old movies, the classic Warner Brothers films, and all the film noir and stuff that's out there. And gosh, we love these characters, and they're all dirty criminals, but we love them. And why is that? Is it because we want to be like them, or because? But we know we never will be, because I'm not going to pull a gun on somebody and rob a gas station or anything. I'm not going to do that, but. When you see it in a TV show or a movie, you just kind of start getting into it.
To me, when I watch, I like The Wire, right? To me, The Wire is also, right? I mean, everybody in The Wire is bad. It shows the show, right, absolutely, especially for the cops. it shows me, as Christian and I talk about all the time, this is the history of the United States, and then there's a history of the United States. So much of it we don't know. So much of it was brought about by the mob. I mean, if I may reference a book called Spooks by the author, I have it right here. The author's name is Jim Houlihan, Hougan, a book I speak of all the time. He goes on and on and on about Bob Links to JFK, Marilyn Monroe, Bobby Kennedy, Hoffa. And it's like, these are things that never, never, never were brought up in school, right?
Oh, of course not. Of course not.
You know?
It's, you know, we talk in...
No, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, in the movie, in our movie, Whole Card, we talk about this, the history of pizza, which pizza in America and tie it to the mafia. And actually, we tell the story wrong, sort of on purpose in the film. But, they say Genovese in Red Hook, New Jersey, opened a pizza place to bring in the Sicilian muscle to make hits and then leave the country. You know, they'd be in the area, for a while, get close to their target, kill them, and leave. And in the movie, we mistakenly say that it was Luciano who did it, but he didn't, which you actually caught. Nobody else did, but you did, so that was good. But, it's just a crazy little thing. And is it true? Is it not true? Well, I've heard it in a few different places, but it was compelling enough to me to put it into the story, so...
Right. I mean, there's wrong with a good, compelling story. I'm kind of I'm a perfectionist. I just get tired of, lazy historians who say something because it's easier versus doing the research. I apologize for somewhat being an asshole on that part of it. But I wanted to have as much within the plot of the story, to be right. The people that would be saying this are true crime buffs who will know it right off the bat. They'll say, wait a second, that's wrong. And I want them to enjoy what we're doing because it's my understanding that we hope to bring in more stuff like that, right?
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry.
My thought is that this is going to be the first of hopefully a bunch of either short films or features or TV shows, whatever, man. Does lightning strike twice? I don't know, but it worked great for us this time, and I want to do it again.
I do as well. We've had some really good conversations about other stories that we would like to tell. It all depends on how well this is received, and I hope that by having people like you, the director, having the actors and actresses that were part of this, having the cinematographer on the show to talk about the show will help people understand the passion that we all had in creating it, and have them want to go and see the movie, because after all, we made the movie for entertainment, we want to entertain people, but at the end of the day, the movie also has to make back its money.
Right.
So I'm hoping that by listening to you and I talk to different actors on it, the DP and the like, that people say, God, this sounds good enough that I can invest, half an hour, 40 minutes of my time and a couple of bucks to see this movie and maybe they'll make something else. T-shirt.
Right, whatever merch we can get. And that would be great. I think about, what a movie costs to go to the theater. Today is Tuesday when you and I are recording this. I got $5 movies here, and I'm going to go see something maybe later today. We'll see. But you know what? There are so many movies that I've gone to see and just left the theater unsatisfied. And even $5, it's getting to be a lot of money. Well, the popcorn was good, but, the movie sunk. And, to do something short that's only a couple bucks,
Right. Speaking of movies, the movie costs, down here, we have the same thing with $5 Monday, Tuesday movies, right?
Okay.
That's where my wife and I see a lot of our films, because to see them, if it's not in a $5 Tuesday, for my wife and I to walk in, say at a decent hour, get some popcorn, get a soda apiece, it's $40, mm-hmm. $50.
Yeah, yeah. Matinee is almost
$10. And then we have to watch, I think that I counted the last time my wife and I went to see a movie, I think we saw 10 commercials. Mm-hmm. 30-second, 60-second commercials. And Marcus Theater tells me they have to do this or to keep down movie costs. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah, I know. But see, that's where you were a little more progressive about this than I was, because I'm an old school movie guy. I love the theater experience. I love the big screen experience. And you are one of the people who are beating you over the head with, no, no, just the new media and the internet are the way to present these things now. And I'm believing it and I'm seeing it. You know, there's a lot of people who just, you know, Marcus Theater, great. You know, you got to show the commercials, whatever. But, you know, some of the big movie experiences are just not as fun anymore because they're letting, you know, teenagers and kids into, you know, some of the scarier PG-13 movies and people talk through the whole thing and they kick the back of your seat you know, some of the angles are bad and all this. And, you know, I kid you not, this is not a joke. My daughter came back from a movie once with lice in her hair. You know, you just,
oh wow,
it's getting to be so you don't want to do all that stuff. That's a true story, by the way, about my daughter. But you know, if you can do this, and my wife is saying to me, "Hey man, go ahead, go to a matinee today. I probably won't see those movies on the big screen anyway. You know, I'll wait till it's on video or whatever." And and a lot of people are doing it, or they're watching it on their TVs. My monitor for my computer is a smart TV. It's a small one, but
right.
It's a smart TV, and I can get Netflix, I can get Amazon on it, and all that. You know, and we're talking about different outlets for these projects, and that's, to me, that's exciting, because people are becoming less enchanted with the movie theaters and more enchanted with something they can, you know, I don't encourage this necessarily, but something they can watch on their phone. You know?
As you talk about the new now, as I like to call it, I turn on my phone, hit Netflix, it's on, and I get tons of movies that I would be typically something I would want to watch in the movie theater or need to watch in the movie theater. I can watch it at my own convenience on my phone, and I don't need that big screen. But at the same time, movies like The 300, the older Star Wars, that calls for the big screen experience because, in my opinion, you also have that audience participation.
Yeah. And that's fun. Comedies are movies you definitely have to see with people. You know, you can't sit and watch a comedy late at night by yourself. You know, Whole Card is a movie that you could do either one because there's some plenty of fun moments in it, but there's some scary moments too. You know, not horror scary, but, you know, some things happen in it that, you know, to move the narrative forward, you know, you have to kind of, you know, take a pause, and some things will surprise you. So some things might, and that's cool.
That's what makes a movie, be it a short or a short feature, a short film or a feature film worthwhile watching, is the entertainment value. I mean, if I watch, I hate to say this because I don't mean to be critical of anyone. My wife loves the Lifetime romance movies, the Hallmark movies, right?
Sure. Yep.
Even though we'll watch the first 5 minutes, we know exactly how it's going to end. We know what twists they're going to do, what kind of hook methods they're going to make it suffer through, right? So before the movie's done, right? But yet, my wife will watch that time after time after time because it takes zero mental effort to see. I hope that with Hold Card, not only do we entertain people, but people find there's a mental effort required to watch it and be entertained by it.
And
I don't want to make pop.
Yeah. One of the things that I like about it is it's done in such a way that I'm hoping people are going to watch it and be like, hang on a second, let me watch. I got to watch that again, you know, and even right away. I think of what, like you were saying, with the Hallmark movies, which, you know, come Christmas time, I don't think there's ever anything else on our TV. I live in a house with, you know, my wife and two girls who love the Hallmark movies. So, you know, if I want to spend time, quality time with my family, we're watching Hallmark movies. But,
absolutely.
But you do know at the very end what's going to happen, who's going to be with who, and all that. You know, then you think about, let's go back a couple of years, M. Night Shyamalan, sorry, saying his name wrong. You know, he starts making movies that have these twists in them. And all of a sudden it's like, whoa, we got a great new creative filmmaker here who's throwing a twist into his stuff. This is awesome. I love this. So he makes The Sixth Sense and makes more money than Croesus, and he makes Unbreakable, and which I think is a better movie myself, but it's more to my comic book mentality, which I think is a great movie. Then he made, probably not in order, but he made The Village, and by that time, I was looking for the twist. And frankly, in The Village, I got the twist after about 20 minutes. I was like, and I leaned over to my wife, and I said, I think I know what this is. And I she said, well, don't tell me. And I said, well, I'll just tell you later if I was right or wrong. And I was right, and I'm not going to spoil it for anybody. But Signs was before that. Signs didn't really have much of a twist, but it had a kind of cool ending. But, you know, then all of a sudden, you go to his movies and you're like, there's going to be a twist coming. I got to try and figure out what it is. It becomes a puzzle. And that's not what you want people doing. You want the narrative to carry them along. You know, and in a way, Chris Nolan, who I am a huge fan of, from the very beginning, you know, his movie Following, is a great, great independent movie, no budget movie, with a twist. Then he did Memento, which had a huge twist, then he did Insomnia wasn't nuts about, but then doing the Dark Knight trilogy. Those played very different from all the other Batman movies, and they're fantastic. But in between, he made these other movies, like The Prestige, which is really one of my favorite movies, and there was a big twist in that. So all of a sudden, it becomes about looking for a twist. You know, now he did Dunkirk, which doesn't have that. We, you know, if we know history, we know how it ends. But,
right.
You know, he just makes a great movie on the subject, so... You know, we're not. Those things become a problem if you keep doing the same thing.
Right. Everyone, to me, I don't want to see the same thing. I want to be intrigued. I want to be mystified. I want to see how they're going to do something different. And if we want to go back in time to old mob movies, which are entertaining, funny, uplifting, right? This Mr. Lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen Mr. Lucky?
Yeah, who's in that one?
I want to say it's Cary Grant. I might have the star wrong. I'm pretty sure. I think it's Cary Grant. But for those people who may not have seen it, Mr. Lucky is the story of a mafia guy who has kind of sort of con game going, and he gets involved in a patriotic way in the Second World War, all because he falls in love with the woman he's trying to scam.
Okay.
And the more scams he tries... I'm sorry?
No, go ahead. I'm listening.
I mean, the more times he tries to get over this woman, the more you think he's going to get caught. This just puts him in deeper into doing the right thing, which is not what he intended to do, right? But then in the movie, he's definitely not necessarily reformed, but he's used his talents to help the war effort.
Okay. See, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, you're right. Yeah, Mr. Absolutely. Lucky, 1943, Cary Grant.
Cary Grant, thank you. Yep.
Yep,
it's a fun film. You know, it's a fun film, and it's kind of so historic because the guy they pawned the movie from did exist. He had a quite interesting life. I don't want to say he was particularly a good guy, but it was at least he had a colorful life. That much they had right.
Right. You know, didn't Lucky DiLuciano approach the government about, you know, killing Castro at some point too? Is that, do you think that's a true story, or?
I believe the mafia, the other way around, I suspect mafia approached the government about different things because they were back and forth over Cuba after Castro threw them out. But that relationship started in the Second World War when the Navy, Office of Naval Intelligence, made a deal with Lucky Luciano to make sure that the Nazis did not do anything on the New York waterfront. Something that they did do during the First World War.
Yeah.
It's
funny because what was the, you might remember better than me, there was across the bay from the Statue of Liberty in 1918, they blew up some munitions plant there or something.
They blew up a couple of things back in the day, ammunition plants, shipping, railroad sabotage, the whole nine yards. And they were and the government was absolutely terrified that the Nazis were going to do the same thing.
Right.
But Look, Lucky in charge and having the unions under his thumb, that didn't happen.
There's a movie there, man.
Yeah, there's a movie there. Yeah. There's a movie there. Not only the real story about what happened, but many, many, many mythical ones too, right? I mean,
even Casablanca.
I mean, Rick isn't necessarily a good guy.
Oh, no, for sure he's not. But he's lovable.
Yeah, he is lovable. And he gets better. You know, he ends the movie joining the French Royal Legion to fight Nazis.
Yeah, yeah. It's fun to mention that. That is really, I think, one of the best movies ever and definitely one of my favorites. I love Bogart.
Me too. And the thing, too, gives the idea of redemption. To me, again, we've talked about this a time or two in different ways. To me, there's always something inspiring of seeing a person who starts out maybe necessarily not the best person in the world, but a person with issues overcome those issues to do the right thing, even though it's easier to walk away.
Yeah, and that's Rick in Casablanca. I mean, he starts off saying, I stick my neck out for no one, and then he makes such a huge and beautiful sacrifice at the end of the movie that you're like, okay, this guy may have been kind of a jerk, a lovable jerk before, but I'm with him the whole way now. It is the beginning of a beautiful friendship, you know?
Yeah.
And again,
that's the thing about the mob that I like, too, is because we know historically they started the resistance movement against the French when the French, the House of Anjou, invaded Sicily, I think, in the 13th and 14th century, right? But it got corrupted over time. That's true at any time. Good intentions are often corrupted in time by power and money.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's interesting to see, do people resist that? Can people, once corrupted by power and money, change their ways? Or are they always stuck in doing the same thing time and time and time again?
Yeah, and, you know, that's funny because there are two histories of the mob in America, or the mafia, or La Cosa Nostra. And if I remember right, mafia means our beautiful thing. Or maybe it's La Cosa Nostra, I don't remember. But it's, you know, some stories, it started out to protect the Italian immigrants who were being taken advantage of by everybody else who'd already, you know, been here, didn't want the immigrants there, weren't, you know, going to help make it easy for them. So this Italians and Sicilians kind of banded together and said, all right, we got our own community here. And they did this in Milwaukee, too, you know, kind of, you know, in Gavin Schmidt's book, The Milwaukee Mafia, he talks about how this huge influx of Italian immigrants, you know, set up shop in the south side of Milwaukee after, I think it was the Irish were like, this place is a crap hole, let's get out of here. And that's where the Italians went because that's all they could afford. But they created a community to protect each other. And out of this community, you know, you don't want to belittle it by saying a few bad eggs, but, you know, there were a few guys who did counterfeiting. Strangely, they were killing people over petty arguments and stuff. But, you know, it just built and built and built. And, you know, the unit got tighter and just became, you know, once you start getting away with stuff, like somebody was killed and nobody got prosecuted for it or they couldn't figure out who did it, that just empowers somebody to take it another step. And that's, you know, possibly what happened. You know, the other story is that these guys banded together because they were all just a bunch of crooks. Well, I have a hard time believing that, too. I think it's somewhere in the middle between the two.
I think it's in the middle, too. I think, too, especially as when things changed, prohibition came in, gambling, you know, became more and more of a thing. Numbers, rackets were able to take over. It would corrupt anyway. I'm not excusing people. They did horrific things. The drug pushing, the different loan shark opportunities that they took full advantage of. You know, it was all, not all evil, but it, you know, people died. You know, sometimes innocent people die simply because it's the wrong place, the wrong time, boom, you're dead.
Yeah. And what's happening today, you know, I think that we don't hear as much about, you know, the Italian mafia or Sicilian mafia, particularly in Milwaukee, as much, mainly because there are so many people who, I mean, there's a lot of crime in Milwaukee. I grew up in the city. I still have a great affection for it, but there's a lot of things going on there. And, you know, it's not like the Italian mob is running everything. And you now a teenager can get his hands on a gun. And, you know, there's so much of that going on with every race of people. You know what? I'm a German and part Austrian. And there are lots of bad eggs there, too, you know. I don't say that with pride, and I kind of chuckle about it, but, you know, it's what's in the heart of people. And, you know, no one, quote-unquote, mob is stronger than the other necessarily. They're equally crazy people in all of them, which is why I think that we're seeing, you know, this term organized crime is almost ridiculous. It's all unorganized now. From what I can see, they're wiser people than me that can tell the truth.
They've also moved into different rackets. I mean, why should the mob, organized crime, let's say Italian, the traditional mafia, why should they compete in drugs when they can compete in petty stack trading scams? Why compete in drug trade and with the crazy slaughtering fools in MS-13 when they can do government real estate? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Go where the competition's not.
Sure. Exactly. And you know what? It's funny because on the set this weekend, I referenced one of my actors. I said, you know, you're more like Vincent Mancini in The Godfather 3, where you see things moving into a legitimate, legitimate business, like Michael's trying to do in The Godfather Part 3, but you don't want that. You want to be the mob. You want to, draw your own power to yourself. And and he took that and ran with it. But everyone all of a sudden starts this conversation about a crummy movie The Godfather Part 3 is, and I'm there defending it. So I don't know what you do.
It's not for everyone. I did not like how it ended, but that's me. That's me, right?
I cried, but okay.
I mean, I went it in differently. I mean, I lived, obviously, I'm so alive today. Just because I'm disappointed in a movie doesn't necessarily make it a bad one.
Right.
But again, there's all kinds of stories within the world of organized crime, be it the mafia, the traditional mafia, be it the Russian mob, the Hispanic mobs, you know, organized crime gangs with the cartels going on today. I mean, and those are stories, too, between the real history and the myths being spread. Somewhere in there are gems of stories. Somewhere there are gems.
Oh, absolutely.
You know. What I find fascinating, and we're going to talk about something else you're interested in doing too, what I find interesting is when the Hispanic culture, especially the culture in Mexico on the Mexican-Texan borders, that there are songs written about these killers. You know, there's this basically praise songs. Absolutely. There's more than, I don't know, I take it you don't listen to a lot of Mexican bands. I'm a big fan of them. Like Tigers of the North, there's song after song after song in Spanish that talk about the successful and sometimes unsuccessful career of drug lords. Why? Well, because they made it. You know, they went from being a peasant to being a guy with billions or millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, crazy. And those, that money comes to them, well, you know, then these guys writing the songs and people are giving them money about it, you know?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
You know, they're not all Robin Hood, you know?
No, they're not.
They're not stealing from rich and giving to the poor. They're corrupting children and destroying lives.
Yeah.
I don't want to glamorize that.
No, and the thing that we don't do well as Americans, and this is kind of off the point of the show, but I need to mention it, the billions of dollars being made by the Mexican drug cartels, the millions of dollars being made by illegal drugs, all stem from the point of fact that in the days of America, and the black I'm living in this same Wisconsin, there are people who want the drugs and will do anything to pay any amount to get them. And eventually that leads, somebody at the end of that chain is making the most money. And when you think about it, it's not people like Guzman, a.k.a. Shorty, who's now sitting in a federal penitentiary waiting for his trial to begin. Ultimately, it's in the hands of a very few, very rich, probably Americans, maybe Mexicans, you know, that we would never directly equate with the drug trade. But that's crime.
Right.
It's organized crime. That's how it works. You know?
Well, there's a movie there, too.
There's a movie there, too. There's definitely a movie there, too. Have you seen the movie Limey?
Limey?
Yeah, Limey.
I haven't seen it yet, no.
It's a guy who reminds me 10, 15 years ago. An Englishman comes to the United States to find out what happened to his daughter.
Yeah.
And he finds out usually with the end of a gun, right? It's very interesting. And it's more he realizes what's going on and who's to blame for it. You know, he quickly loses his real taste of revenge because he realizes, and the movie does a good job of explaining what's going on, who's really at fault. Isn't that
okay.
What you would think off the bat? It's well worth seeing. It's well worth your time. Well worth the time to see. If you can catch it on Netflix or someplace late at night, I've seen it on HBO lately, check out. But again, you're right. There's so many stories to tell about organized crime and its history in America, whatever nationality it might be.
Yeah. Yeah. Or political party.
Or political. Right? I mean, that too. You know, who is really, when you look at it, who is referencing that book I mentioned, Spooks, right?
Yeah, yeah.
To think that in the early 60s, CBS was actually paying people, Cuban immigrants, money to go back to Cuba to blow things up so they can then be interviewed on TV. You'd think you'd go to jail for something like that, right?
Right, right.
Right? It happened.
Crazy.
Let's go. It's incredible.
What was the author of Spooks?
Spooks is written by, I'll give you a name for everybody out there listening, they're going to plug a podcast.
Right.
Spooks is is written by the man named Jim. Last name is H-O-U-G-A-N. I got mine at Amazon for a couple of bucks. Some libraries have it. Ours used to. Then it disappeared, so I went out and bought one. A podcast.
So it wasn't you that took it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? Oh, he also wrote a really great one about Watergate too, where he talks about what his opinion really happened at Watergate. It's like, oh, really? That makes sense. Anyway, that's way off the subject. But if you listen to Gangland Wire by my good friend Gary Jenkins, he had just done a show last week. He did a series of shows on the old leader of the Senate, guy from Nevada. The name escapes me. Reed. Senator Reed, right? He had an author of a book on who talks about, was Harry Reid part of the organized crime racket in Nevada? And he makes the case. Now,
interesting.
It's interesting and very interesting because they don't play. It's like, this is what, who was, because of the wiretaps, right? This is what was said in the wiretaps. This is what it meant. This is what we think it meant. Sadly, we'll never know because Reed was never charged or brought to trial.
Yeah, not yet. He's still alive, though.
He's still alive, but that's happened long ago. Then that could bring him. I'm sure it's past statute's limitation. But it makes you think. I think it's the Godfather that states, is a quote in there that every great fortune starts with a crime.
Yeah, it might be. Might be but it's true.
Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say it's true. I think there are plenty of legitimate, hardworking, honest people who have done well.
I would agree.
You know, for some people, there, you know, I mean, we don't know what somebody did. Yeah, you know, but you get someone like Harry Reid, and I hate to be political about it. I don't think he's smart enough. I don't think they would work with a guy like him because he's a dunce.
At the time, he had a lot of power. He had a lot of power in the Gaming Commission, which is why they wanted him in their pocket. Yeah. But and again, it doesn't make everybody. It doesn't make all people involved in fortunes crooked. And no, you're correct. It does not.
Right.
It just makes for interesting stories for people to look into to find out what their truth in the topic might be. But let's talk about some other things you do. Yeah, it is a movie. Absolutely, there's so many of them. But you're also big into radio dramas, are you not?
I am. In fact, that's where most of my my writing has been. I do audio dramas.
What got you involved in doing audio dramas?
Mostly listening to them when I was younger. I just fell in love with the medium and started buying some of the old, back in those days it was on cassettes, you know, the old-time radio shows. And now I buy downloads of them. But it was funny because I went to a bookstore in Green Bay here, and this is 25 years ago almost, and I saw that the book Left Behind by Jerry Jenkins and Tim LaHaye had been adapted into a radio show, a dramatic radio show, 12 episodes, 12 half-hour episodes. And I bought it and I listened to it and I was pretty impressed with the production, because sometimes the production can really stink, but this was really good. And I looked at the information on it and I saw the website for the company, Gap Digital, and I just sent them an email and I said, "You are doing exactly what I would love to be doing," you know. And I talked about a little bit about my love of audio drama and radio drama, I think I called it at the time. And, you know, I left it at that. And about 3 or 4 days later, I got an email back from a fellow named Todd Busteed. And he said, "Well, if you're serious, here's kind of an audition for you." He said, "Go out and find a book." And he listed a specific book. And he said, "Just write me a script, as long as you want, as many characters as you want, based on the beginning of this book." And so within an hour, I had the book in my hand and started reading it. And it was a very charming book. And in probably, you know, 10 days, I sent them scripts for two half-hour episodes, a lot of characters, though, and sent them to him. And he was surprised how quickly I got it done. Surprised that they didn't stink. You know, looking back at them now, I think, oh man, I could do so much better. But he and I kind of stayed in touch for a couple of years. And then he got a hold of me one day and said they were going to be doing a series based on the Left Behind the Kids series. And would I be interested in working on it? And I said, absolutely, thinking that I'd, you know, if they did 12 episodes, I might get, you know, 2 or 3 of them. And I ended up writing every episode, first draft of every episode. We did 72 episodes. And it was a great learning experience, personally and professionally. Todd's a great guy to work with, and I'm looking forward to the next time I get to work with him. But yeah, it was fantastic, and he got me some gigs on some other jobs, writing jobs. So the last thing that I worked on and got paid for in the audio drama field was a company, Heirloom Audio, and they're in Thompson, Illinois. I adapted a G.A. Henty book for them called Wolf the Saxon, and it's G.A. Henty wrote a lot of, you know, boys' own style history stories. And this one is about the Battle of Hastings and in 1066. And it was a great story. I love doing it. I've heard the final mix of it, and it is fantastic. And the guy who directed and mixed it, Todd Busteed, same guy gave me my first writing job. And
wow.
Yeah, it's a great experience. And I can't wait to tell you that it's available commercially. And it's 2.5 hours long. About 5 episodes I did, and I love it. I love what they did with it. We started with a script that I think was pretty good because I started with good material, and they raised it to another level, which, you know, that happened this last weekend too with our actors. I mean, the script was pretty good, and they made it sing. They made it fly. You know, pick your verb. I think they did an awesome job with it. So, you know, I can't take all the credit, but yeah.
I mean, that one young lady who took the opportunity to research the, she had a copy of the script, and did some research and corrected, brought to your attention a few points that she thought could be changed to make it even better.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was in the rewriting process. I'll kind of explain that a bit. In the rewriting process, especially where a particular card game is concerned, as I was rewriting it, things were changing, and I was not as careful as I should have been, making sure that all those details were correct. Because in the beginning, I mapped the game out, and it worked. But then as things changed and characters did different things, the game changed. So all of a sudden, you know, when the dealer says, okay, your bet, she read it and was like, wait a minute, this person has a high card on the table now. And she mentioned it to me, and I was like, ah, you're right. We got it. You know, we got to do something. So yeah, I had sharp actors. You know what's great, though? And we didn't set out to do this, but we ended up with a very good-looking cast. The women are beautiful. The men are very handsome. And they have character. All of them have character in their eyes, in their face. I mean, they just look good. And I think when people see them, they're just going to be, you know, really impressed with their skills, with their acting skills, and really with how well they take these characters and make them their own, and how good looking they are.
Yes, I would concur. I think the cast went above and beyond, as did the crew. I think that the DP was absolutely, I have a tremendous access to have, and I was also impressed by how hard working the PAs were on set. There's no sitting around. If people had something to do, they did it. And they didn't have anything to do, they found something to do.
Well, and that's why everything went as smooth as it did. We were surrounded by talented people who were ready to work hard, you know, in front and behind the camera. And we rolled the dice and we rolled sevens, baby.
Absolutely.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
You want to roll sevens, right?
I hope. I know. Before we end the show, we need to go and discuss where people can find you online if like to get samples of your work or talk about putting you to work and maybe helping them with an audio project.
You know what? That's a good question. My email address I can give you, and you can find me on Facebook. I have a presence there. I mouth off all the time. Darby Kern, it's DarbyKern. If you hear this and you want to be friends with me, just remember, there'll be proof that you wanted to be friends with me. Or you can send me emails. My email address that you can use is filmbuff, all one word, of course, FILMBUFF @laugheveryday.com. So yeah, you know, I'm hoping to be doing some more audio stuff in the future. So I'm always looking for voice actors, especially if you're in and around the Wisconsin area. Chicago's good too, but you'll have to drive a bit maybe. But yeah, you know, Wayne, I wanna be doing some more of these projects with you, and we are going to be looking for the right actors and the, you know, right people behind the camera and the whole thing. I want to do this for as long as we can. I hope people want us to do it.
I do too, and that what comes down to this part of it is the way they can help us out is obviously they can go to the Hold Card page we have in Facebook. Yay, they can like the page, which we would appreciate it. You can find me there. You can see my great looking picture. I look so studly there. They can like me personally. You know, they can find me with my email. Actually, my name will find me too, Wayne Klingman. They can follow me at the Milwaukee Mob on Twitter. That would be great. But there'll be opportunities for people to show they like what we're trying to do by when it comes time to put the short out there and Vimeo Prime, to spend a couple bucks it'll take to watch it, buy the shirts when they become available, hopefully damn shortly, and hopefully buy pictures of Cocaine Bear when he gets available.
Tell me about that real quick.
Oh, Cocaine Bear, for those people. Cocaine Bear. We back in the day, we had a young lady on who told us the story of Cocaine Bear, which was a real-life story of a bear running his own business in the National Forest in Tennessee, I believe, when he found a stash 75 pounds of cocaine, which he had to eat. Obviously, that was not good for him. And he died. And because I believe, if I remember correctly, because he died, and where he died, he had to be given an autopsy. And then that cadaver spent a number of years being sent place to place. He even spent some time in a casino in Vegas, of all places.
Really?
But as part of the Milwaukee Mob Twitter feed I have, I mentioned Cocaine Bear doing different bear-type stuff and cocaine-ass type stuff. It's always fun, and I have a great artist who goes by the handle Skin Cube do a really great rendering of what he thought Cocaine Bear would look like. He did a fine job. And I hope to sell them to interested parties in order to make a couple bucks to try to break even on this great project, which you help bring in, which I'm very, very thankful that we finally got to work together on something.
I am too. You know what? I just came up with an idea. It's going to be the movie Scarface, the Al Pacino version, only Scarface is going to be Cocaine Bear. So
that'd make a great comic book. We should do it. Okay. We could have all animal characters, right?
That's right.
My friend, my recent immigrant in the United States, my friend Dean Burnham, has a farm near where we live. And one of the things he bought for his farm is he bought guinea hens. And
okay.
the guinea hens are playing protection racket on the chickens. Because if they see the chickens, they chase the chickens away from their food and eat their food. They're basically bullies, and the chickens are terrified of these three little birds. And the way that the way that Dean describes it, it's like these are the biggest, baddest gang members. And who knows, maybe they're really running a gang. You never know what the next gang influence might be. Anyway, sir, I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. It's been a pleasure talking to you again. Again, I want to thank you for being part of Hold Card, as big as you were. I really appreciate all the things you've done, as well appreciate the cast and crew as well.
Thanks, Wayne. It's great being here. It's great working with you. We waited too long to make that happen, but I'm glad it happened.
Absolutely.
I hope it continues to happen. So
I believe it
will,
sir. I
have a 300-piece poker set here sitting that we can use again and again and again.
Right on, then. Ryan, sir. All right, then. With that, sir, you have a great day. And everybody out there, we'll be continuing to bring in different people from the production of Hold Card on the show to get people interested, know what's going on about it, and taking it from there. With that, I wish everybody the best day possible and have a fun time. Okay? Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.